All right, we're in Philippians chapter 4 tonight, Philippians chapter 4, and verses 6 and 7, Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, familiar verses to us. We've read them many times, I'm sure. They're not new to most of us, I'm sure, but let's read them again just for the sake of our study this evening. Verse 6, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. And we trust the Lord will add his blessing to the reading of his word. Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7 is really a great text. It's a great scripture. It's a Bible truth which, if we applied more often, would probably bring us to a place where we enjoyed far less stressful lives, wouldn't it? The Bible says we're to be careful for nothing, or we're not to be anxious about anything. And the fact is that we live in a very anxious society, don't we? We're living in very anxious times, actually. People are worried about all kinds of things, whether it is terrorism or the global downturn in the economy or whatever it is, you know, their children, all kinds of things. And it's been estimated that stress is one of the leading causes of death in the top 10 causes of death in the Western world. Of those 10 causes of death, it says not just is stress one of the things, but of those 10, 8 of those conditions are stress related in some way. So if you're always under stress, there's a very good chance you're going to wind up with some ill health or some kind of condition or other that's going to end up with you needing some medical attention. Experts agree that the average business executive has a 1 in 3 chance of dying of a stress-induced heart attack by the age of 60. Isn't that interesting? 1 in 3 by the age of 60. It's very young, isn't it? But that's all stress-related. And because of that, in the management, in the business world, management courses conduct seminars on coping with stress. But let's not think tonight that it's only the high flyers, the Donald Trumps and the Alan Sugars of this world, who suffer such things. We need to understand that stress affects us all. So we want to think about some of the statistics tonight as we're leading into this study. Now, we're not going to do an awful lot of Bible study tonight because we're just laying a foundation, and then we'll come back and look at what the Bible says about some of these things. But we will refer to one or two scriptures as we go along. But according to reports, to self-reports, those who submit their own health report, consistently stress is the second most commonly reported work-related illness. So people don't come into work because they are stressed. I'm sure you teachers have discovered that. Police officers, civil servants, you name it. In any occupation, really, people struggle with stress. The 2007 Psychosocial Working Conditions Survey indicated that around 13.6% of all working individuals thought their job was very stressful or extremely stressful. So if you ask people, you know, well, is your job stressful? They'll say, everybody will say yes. You know, even the postman. You know, postman has his stresses. You know, every day the postman comes to our house, the dog nearly breaks its neck on the window. And I often think, boy, I wouldn't want that job, you know, running down driveways with bigger dogs than ours chasing you. That's a pretty stressful job. And according to the mental health charity Mind, British businesses lose an estimated £26 billion each year in sickness, absence, and in lost productivity. And with the greater awareness of health issues, they say that they could save a third of these costs, which would be about £8 billion a year if they could eliminate stress. And the same thing is testified by the TUC. They say the same thing, that stress contributes to about a loss of £7 billion per annum to the economy. According to the Health and Safety Executive, stress is now the biggest cause of working days lost through injury or ill health, and it's an estimated 12.8 million working days lost a year. That's a lot of days, isn't it? So it means it's a big, big issue. Now, there was a poll taken some time back about the 10 most stressful jobs. And this was on behalf of an online company called Skillsoft. They're an online learning provider. And here were the top 10 most stressful jobs. Number one was IT, okay, information technology, working with computers. Number two was medicine, if you're a doctor or a nurse or you're a caring professional of some kind. Number three was engineering. Number four, sales and marketing. That's those poor people who phone you up every now and then and you give them an earful and you think, oh, I told them. Well, not just you, but probably hundreds of other people that same day told them, and the poor souls are under stress. Think about that the next time some dear fellow from India called Sydney phones you. Education, teaching, is another cause of stress. Finance was the sixth most stressful white-collar job. I would imagine that might have gone up the list since they did this survey, given the present financial crises. And, a lot of people are under very serious pressure in the financial world. Human resources, personnel, as we used to call it, taking care of staff and hiring and firing and dealing with all the disputes and difficulties is number seven. Here is operations. I'm not sure what is meant by operations. I'm assuming that's some kind of logistics of some kind as opposed to surgery. Although that could be stressful also. Number nine is production, people who are involved in some kind of production. And number 10 is clerical work. I looked at that and I thought, pastors aren't on that list. Then I thought about my day today. I got up this morning. Stop laughing. I got up this morning. I was at my desk at 6 o'clock this morning. Thank you. Finishing off my Bible study for this evening. That's education. It's on the list. Then I spent some time doing spreadsheets, IT, which were related to our faith promise, finance. And in the afternoon, I went and visited the sick, the caring profession. So four of the 10 are on that list, okay? So I think pastors are getting a bad deal here as far as the 10 go. But there is a lot of stress in ministry. Seriously, a lot of fellas do bail out of ministry because of stress. And, thankfully, I'm very blessed, I think, pastor in this church, but I know other guys are in much more difficult situations as far as the people they're dealing with. Because people can make life very hard for you. And Yes, well, anyway, moving swiftly on. It said that stress now leads to 10% of people experiencing ulcers at some point in their lives. Now, 40 years ago, only one woman for every 20 suffered from stress. But today it is said that one in two women suffer stress. So women seem to be more subject to stress than men are. Stress then weakens us physically, and over 50% of all illnesses are stress related. Okay, so what is stress? Well, according to the dictionary, stress is a strain, a physical, emotional, or mental pressure. Force, the systems of force applied to a body. Or as the International Stress Management Association UK puts it, stress is the adverse reaction people have to excessive pressures or other types of demand placed on them. If you've ever studied physics, you will have got this definition of stress, and this is probably the best. Stress implies movement being resisted or the action of two opposing forces. Okay, so when does stress happen in your life? When you're trying to do something, when you're trying to get somewhere, and somebody or something is stopping you getting from where you're wanting to go. So, you know, in education, an unruly student can do that. He can make life pretty stressful. Medicine, it could be a lack of funding that doesn't allow you to treat a patient the way that you would like to, and you feel put upon, and so on. There's all kinds of ways in which your goals can be resisted. So humanly, stress occurs when my motivation in life and my goals in life are resisted and hindered. So stress has to do with conflict. It's about collision of two forces, and we all experience it. You know, looking at that list of top 10 occupations, the IT worker, you think, well, how can that be stressful? How can being an IT worker be stressful? Well, you know, think about this. A lot of people have computers who don't know how to use them. It's true. So who do they phone? They phone the IT support. And here's a guy who's got degrees coming out of his ears and knows every microchip back to front, upside down, and all the rest of it. And he gets somebody on the other end who is complaining their computer won't come on. They've done everything with it, shook it, kicked it, blah, blah, blah. And he says, have you put the plug in? Oh, there's a plug. He gets a day full of that. It can get very stressful, dealing with people who are moronic who just haven't got a clue. Then the same fellow, he's dealing with people like that all day. And his boss comes and starts breathing down his neck and wondering why there's a backlog of complaints. Why haven't you dealt with these complaints? Why haven't you dealt? Well, he's had old Mrs. Jones on here who just got her new PC at the age of 93, and she's trying to microwave tonight's dinner in it. And, he's been having to deal with her for the last half hour, and all the while these phone calls are racking up, and his boss has given him an earful. He's under pressure. Okay? The factory worker, he may be under pressure from the point of productivity targets. He may have to get something put together, assemble something, but all the while he's waiting for parts to come. The parts haven't arrived. They're waiting on their supplier bringing the parts. Meanwhile, there's somebody screaming at this end of the job wanting the assembled piece now, and the poor fellow in the middle is under pressure. He's unable to do his job. For a housewife, it may be a case of guests coming at the weekend and finding that she doesn't have the time to prepare a nice meal, or she doesn't have adequate time in her mind to get the house in ship shape. Why they have to do that, I don't know. But anyway, they have to. But housewives have this thing, they're going to have the house tidy, we're going to have nice food, and blah, 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 blah. I live there all year. None of that's done for me. Anyway, but the housewife's there, and maybe she's, worrying about, all these things, and then to boot, she's, helping a child with homework, or maybe she's got a sick baby at home, and there's pressure on there. Okay? Or maybe it's a student who's preparing for exams. That's very stressful, isn't it? You've got a sitting exam on a certain date, you've got all this information, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years of information, you've got to cram it all in your head and bring it into an exam room, and maybe you're at home and it's one of those households where there's a television blaring in every room and there's kids screaming and dogs barking and people are knocking on the door and people are shouting at each other and you're trying to study in the midst of all of this. Very stressful. But stress also is a necessary part of life. We need stress. You know that. If you didn't have some stress, you wouldn't get anything done. So it's identified as a positive function of the mind and the body, and it's there to help us deal with various threats we often meet. So we need a certain amount of stress if we're to live full and meaningful lives, and it's been claimed that stress is even necessary for survival itself. Zoologists have discovered that some animals in their care will die unless they're provoked to stress. So they deliberately do things to scare them, startle them, make them jump, run, you know. They have to do that to keep those animals alive. They just let them loll about, they die for lack of stress. Yes, indeed. But it is recognized that even among people, a certain measure of stress enhances your life. You know, if you ever had something you had to do for a particular deadline, and you were under stress a little bit getting it done, but you met the deadline, and you got it done, how did you feel? Elated. You felt good about yourself. You thought, I did that. I achieved that. I managed to finish that on time. And you go out of your office or your workplace with your head held high and say, man, I'm the bee's knee and I did that. You know, and you feel good about yourself. Well, that's a positive side of stress. Now, all the surveys reveal that human productivity increases with stress. So we've got a productivity chart here, a little graph, if you like. And in this productivity graph, if you notice, you've got one end of the graph, you have, well, on the bottom line, you have stress. On the far right is the higher the stress, on the left is the lower the stress, and then your productivity increasing or decreasing accordingly. Now, we find that as stress increases, so too our productivity increases. But the moment we become overstressed, then our productivity begins to fall. So if you look at the low end, if you're in a job or you're in a, and your life is not stressful at all, well, what are some of the things you'll experience? Apathy, boredom. You know, it's interesting. On Facebook, a lot of kids in Northern Ireland have been on holiday now. They have the longest summer holidays in Northern Ireland. They start about the third week of June, and they don't go back to about the first week of September, so they get 9 weeks off school. So they've been off about 4 or 5 weeks now, and a lot of the kids I knew are starting to write, I'm bored. Why are they bored? Because they're not stressed. Nobody's challenging them. They're just lying in bed, lolling around, you know, walking the streets. They've been away on their holidays. They've had their annual riot. You know, there's nothing left, nothing to look forward to. They're bored. Okay? So boredom is a lack of stress. You may feel, if you're not under enough stress, you may feel overqualified for the task. There's nothing worse than going for a job to find it's just so easy. It doesn't even require thinking about. It's not challenging you. That may result in interrupted sleep, or irritability, or dullness. Now, what's interesting, if you notice, this is not a social commentary, but I think it's true. If you notice, people who are long-term unemployed suffer a lot of those things. They suffer a lot of those things. So there's no stress in their lives. Now, if you get the stress level right, and it's pitched exactly where you can handle it, well, you end up with a positive attitude in life. You're highly motivated. You find your tasks challenging. You have a restful night's sleep. You're calm. And you're decisive. But if you're then pushed over your limits, what? Negativity sets in. I hate my job. It's too much pressure. I don't like the people I work with. I think I'll look for another job. Negativity sets in. Spiritlessness. I don't want to go to work today. You feel like you're underqualified for the task. It's overwhelming you. You feel like you're just not able to handle the workload or the level academically, intellectually at which your work is pitched. You may suffer insomnia, worrying about it, anxious. You know, I'm not doing well at work. I'm not getting my work done. I've got another 10 files waiting for me in the morning. You can't get a sleep at night. Insomnia sets in. Frustration. Frustrated with yourself, frustrated with others, frustrated with the job, and then poor judgment, a lack of discernment creeps in. So all of that is part and parcel of stress. Now, when we say a person is suffering from stress, what we're really meaning here is that they're overstressed. So understand, like I say, all of us have stress. Stress is good. Too much stress is bad. So we're talking here, when I say the word stress, I'm talking about overstressed, okay? Here's how one author puts it. Stress is the spice of life. In all types of activities, we are involved in stress. When we exercise our muscles, we are stressing them. When we exercise our minds, we are stressing them. Life without stress would be dull indeed. But the problem most of us face far too often is excess stress and strain. It seems too hard to cope. So let's look at another graph. Sorry to have so many graphs, but anyway, hopefully they help you. This is a performance versus arousal chart. And what we're looking here is that these red, white, and blue lines are the human function curve. And if we experience stress, we discover certain psychological and our physiological changes. If those changes, which we'll look at in a moment, occur, they're measured here against our performance and efficiency, and we plot a graph as follows. Okay, so when the level of stress arousal rises past the point P, so P is the pinnacle of your stress. That's the limit you can take. Okay, so that's as much as you can take. So you see you've got these tasks along the bottom numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4. You know, if you've got task 1, there's not too much stress there. If you think about task 1, you look up here, you can do task 1, no problem. Task 2, that's putting me under a little pressure. Task 3, I'm starting to dip over the edge. Task 4, I've lost it. Okay? Now, if you look at that, if you move along at each point, you see this large drop in efficiency. Now, some people can cope better than other people can cope. So the type A people and type B people can cope better than the type C people. Okay, so there are some people who can handle high levels of stress. You're stressed already. Okay. All right. These are types of people, Hazel, A, B, and C. Okay. These are jobs or tasks. Okay. And you've got to accomplish these tasks. Yes. 4 is not very hard. Because he got 4 tasks. He doesn't have 1 task of a size 4. He's now got 4 tasks. So each task is building on the other. Okay. And so on type 1, if you just have 1 task, it's not very stressful. When you get 2 tasks, it's increasingly stressful. 3, it's become more stressful. 4 is the straw that breaks the camel's back. Okay? Happy enough? Yes. And some people are dipping sooner than others. That's the point we're making, okay? So type C is dipping. Or if you want, we have A, B, and Hazel, okay? Didn't want to put names on it, but since you exposed yourself. So you have these 3 types of personality. Now, some people are highly strong. They're quickly stressed, aren't they? Give them, just a couple of tasks, and they're, and you're like, what is wrong with those people? Other people, it seems like you couldn't stress them if you tried, personally. I know we complain a lot about government, but I would hate to be the Prime Minister. I wouldn't want that job No, that's a very, very stressful job. Why anybody wants it beats me, okay? Because, you're never, whatever you do, it's wrong. And, you go from one calamity to another, and you get the blame for everything. You get the blame for flooding, terrorism, the sun shining for too long, whatever it is, things are beyond your control, the global recession, whatever it is. You get the blame for everything. So obviously a person who's the Prime Minister needs to be a type A person. He needs to be able to cope with a lot of things all at once, be able to go to his bed at night, sleep those 4 or 5 hours that he gets, and get up the next morning and ready to face a new day and head off and see what that morning is bringing for him. Now, here's the thing I want you to see. Stress is cumulative. Okay, so each problem, 1, 2, 3, and 4, evokes its own stress response. Occurring separately, none of them would be sufficient of themselves to push you over the edge, to cause you any emotional or physical collapse. But as you see, sometimes it appears that the smallest problem seems to give us the greatest difficulty. So sometimes you give somebody a little task and you know they have a stress response. And you're like, what is wrong with it? Why can't they do it? It's just a little thing. Why can't they just do it? It's not that hard. But wait a minute. It's cumulative. This person has other things going on in their lives, and now you have come along with the last little weight and dangled it on, and they've gone. Okay? So you've got to be aware of that. You know, and sometimes, you know, I think when we encounter people in society who are mean or who are, you know, agitated, angry people, sometimes we assume they're just angry for no reason. But actually, some of these people are under tremendous stress. And, you know, they're not angry at us particularly, but there's things going on in their lives, you know. And sometimes if we, you know, if we could get to the bottom of that, we might find that there's a person there who's really in trouble. But that's another story. Now, what factors determine how well I perform under stress? Well, how do I become a type A, type B, or type C personality? Well, here's the factors. It could be in your inherited disposition. As I say, some people are just more highly strung than other people. Okay, I noticed with our kids, when they were small, we were helping them with homework. I mean, Claire was a nightmare, particularly at maths. Absolute nightmare. Every night, don't ask Claire ever to be a church treasurer. Don't ever ask her to be church treasurer. Okay, never, ever. If you do, I'm leaving. Okay? She cannot count the fingers on her hand. I mean, honestly, I'd be doing simple maths with her. I'd say to her, you know, well, look, it's just 4 plus 5. What's 4 plus 5? 395. Where did you get that from? And she, I don't know, I can't do it. And she gets so heady strung. Now, our second daughter couldn't care less. What's 4 plus 5? Oh, who cares? What's it matter? She is completely the opposite, all right? She was a type A personality. Funnily enough, you know, both of them have pretty high stress jobs. You know, Claire's a social worker, and how she does that with her disposition, I don't know. But she does it. She's trained to do it. She does it very well by all accounts. And our other daughter is a logistics operator, so she's got quite a stressful job too. But it's part of your inherited disposition. And, I'm going to say that I think the more highly strung members of our family get that from Hazel. See? You're type C. You've already admitted it. And so you can have an inherited disposition. I'm really in trouble now, aren't I? It can be a learned behavior, all right? It can be a learned behavior also. Watching how your parents cope with stress, you catch the behavior, okay? It's not taught to you. It's caught by you. And if they cope very well with stressful situations and you see them coping very well, you also might cope very well having watched them. However, if they are people who struggle with pressures, then chances are you're going to struggle with pressure also. Previous experiences of stress. Now, here's the thing. If I had a problem before, if I had a bad experience before, and that problem recurs, that may instantly raise my stress levels. Let me give you an example. Suppose you have been in a situation that was very confrontational and put you under a lot of stress. All right, you get out of that situation, you go into a new situation with new people, and a very slight confrontation takes place. Nothing on the same scale as what you previously experienced. Just a slight difference of opinion on something. What happens? Stomach goes into knots. What's happening here? Why is this person so uptight? Because of their bad experience. And now they're bringing that with them, that baggage with them. And they see a problem recurring and their stress level rises sharply. Your physical condition might also contribute to your stress level. Now, this is a fact. People who are rested and healthy cope better than people who are sick and tired. It's a good reason to get to bed early at night. Get a good night's rest. Okay, if you're rested, you can cope with most things if you're rested. But if you're exhausted, and if you couple that with illness, life can be very, very stressful. Here's one that definitely doesn't apply to the man. Hormonal state. I'm not going to say anything about type C personalities. But I'm sorry to say it, ladies. It's a fact of life. It's the way God made us. But ladies are far more hormonal than men. They are. It's true, isn't it? So you have, you know, premenstrual tension, pregnancy, you know, change of life, all of those things mess with your hormones. Let me tell you, pregnancy was one of the great learning curves of my life. I can imagine. I can only tell you that when my wife was pregnant, I discovered a whole new side to her that I had never seen before. And so it was scary at times. I don't know. It took me 4 goes to figure out where I was going wrong. But anyway, so we had 4. But by the 4th, I was sort of ready for it. She told me she was pregnant. I went right out, bought a crash helmet, got myself a suit of armor, and got ready for it. Okay, I can handle this. No, but seriously, you know, it's a fact that pregnancy messes with your state of mind, as does these other hormonal conditions. Certain drugs might also contribute to stress. So this is not necessarily illicit drugs. It could be illicit drugs. But also over-the-counter drugs, prescribed drugs, can mess with your state of mind and reduce your inability to cope with certain things. I remember years and years ago, we used to have an Awana club. Did you have Awana here at one point? No. Anyway, Awana club was a children's club where you had to memorize Bible verses, basically. And the children were allowed to, I think it was 2 or 3 helps, hints, before you decided that they hadn't adequately learned the verse and weren't therefore allowed to go on to the next level to get an award. And I was sitting down with a little boy one day, and he was doing his memory verse. He was only about 11, and he was doing his memory verse, and he got the verse messed up, and I gave him his 2 or 3 helps, whatever it was. And after he got his 3rd strike, I said to him, "Well, listen now, you're going to have to go and learn that verse again because you haven't learned it." And he said, "I have learned it." And I said, "No, you haven't learned it because I've had to have 3 helps." And he was, at this point, getting very emotional. And he started screaming at me, "I have learned it, I have learned it." And he was screaming at the top of his voice. And all the other kids and all the leaders were turning around now, and it was me against him, you know. And I was going, "No, you haven't learned it." Well, at this point, he gets up, and he is just going ballistic. And this kid starts lashing at me with his fists. And this is over a Bible verse, right? And I'm thinking, what in the world is wrong with him? So I grabbed his arms, and I called one of the other workers over. And I said, "Grab his legs." He was kicking me. And I said, "Grab his legs, we're taking him outside." And we took him, and he was thrashing around. We took him outside, and I said, "Somebody, go and get his mother." I said, "Get his mother, this kid's out of control, you know." And so they went and got the mother, and the mother came, and as soon as she saw him, she says, "You've been glue sniffing again, haven't you?" And sure enough, right around his lips were all the little blisters from sniffing glue. and his mind state was so radically altered by glucosniffing that just being turned down on a Bible verse threw his stress levels sky high, which was totally abnormal for a child. Totally abnormal for a child. Alcohol or alcohol withdrawal can contribute to your stress level. If you've been around alcoholics, you can appreciate that. They can be people who have a very low capacity to deal with pressure and end up screaming, cursing, shouting, throwing things, being violent and so on. And the consumption of certain foods, in particular caffeine. You know that caffeine, it produces natural stress symptoms. Yeah. I knew there had to be a reason for you to decaf for both of you. Okay. But actually, you know, people take coffee thinking I'll help me cope. It won't. It makes it worse. It makes it worse. And it reduces your ability to cope. So those are some of the stress factors. Okay. Now, the stress response. When we're under stress, we naturally respond in ways, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Mentally, we experience increased arousal. What do I mean by that? I mean we become more alert mentally. The brain goes into overdrive. It starts working very, very quickly. Okay, so all kinds of thoughts are rushing through your mind when you're under stress. Emotionally, we start responding to those things we perceive to be a threat. So we experience fear. Let me give you an example of this. Have you ever walked down a dark alley or a dark lane at night alone and you start to feel fear? Even though there's nothing there to make you feel that way, but your mind goes into overdrive, doesn't it? Oh, somebody's going to jump out on me. Somebody's going, well, I hear footsteps behind me. Oh, you know, and by the time you get to the end of the lane, you know, you're a quivering mess. And nothing's happened to you, okay? So that's a stress response, okay? You're responding to stress. Anxiety, obviously, you know, worrying about things, that's a stress response. Worry, 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 worry. The Lord Jesus spoke about worry, didn't he? Saying you can't even, you know, you can't, you know, add any height to your stature through worry. You know, there's no point about worrying about tomorrow. There's enough things going on today to be worried about without worrying about what's happening tomorrow. So we allow anxiety to attack us emotionally. And then also anger. Here's an example of anger as a stress response. You have a road accident. You know, you bump cars with somebody. And you've seen this 100 times, I'm sure. One of the drivers gets out, flings his door open, usually the injured party, gets out, and what? Screams at the other driver. Why is he screaming? Isn't the other driver insured? Can't they get their car fixed? Of course they can. But what they're having is a stress response. You know, when you get when you're crashed into, or when you crash, it's stressful, isn't it? You know, if you've ever had an accident, your stress levels go through the roof in a second. And so, you know, conflict occurs, road rage, whatever you want to call it, that's part and parcel of a stress response. Same with air rage. You know, you go through an airport. Going through an airport now is very stressful. I hate airports, frankly. Sometimes I'd rather swim to the places I'm going than go through an airport. It's a horrible experience. It used to be reasonably okay. And it's horrible. Take off your shoes, take off your belt, you know, go through this buzzer, have somebody frisk you down. Now they've got you standing naked in Manchester Airport while they look at you on a scanner. You're thinking, oh my word, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, and by the time you get on the plane, you're up to here. And then what? There's no peanuts. What? There's no peanuts? The in-flight movie isn't playing. You lose it. Air rage, okay? So that's a stress response. Physically, there are definite physiological changes which occur which affect the body in preparing it to deal with any perceived threat. So you have an increase in adrenaline. It's interesting, you know, if you've ever been in an accident where you've got hurt, you probably didn't feel the pain for some time. I've seen people get knocked down and get up again. Jump up on their feet again. I'm okay, I'm okay. You've just been hit by a bus. Yeah, but I'm okay, I'm okay. I can handle it.
What's going on there? Adrenaline.
We're under stress. The body pumps adrenaline into the system. Adrenaline actually acts as a painkiller. Did you know that? People who are shot don't normally feel the pain for a bit. You know, they know that they've been hit. Obviously, there's blood spurting. And they have stress. But they don't, at that point in time, feel any great pain necessarily. Okay? They may carry on for a bit. So what's happened is your heart rate rises, your blood pressure is rising, adrenaline is pumping, and that's one of the physiological signs. Improved efficiency in breathing. Okay, you ever see somebody breathing heavily when they're under stress? That's a stress response, okay? Sweating is a stress response. You know, when I was doing the weakest link thing, this is a little secret for you. This is something you will not know, as I didn't know till I went there. They give all of the contestants sweat pads for under their armpits. And between rounds, they change your sweat pads because they don't want you sweating on TV. It doesn't look good, does it? And so, but you'll appreciate when you get in there and you face the female Antichrist that it's a very stressful time, okay? And the people at television know that you're under stress, and they've made preparation for a sweating response. Okay, increase in muscle tone. Why do you think your muscle tone increases when you're stressed? To fight your fear, tense up. All your muscles are tense now, so your muscle tone is increased. You're ready. Yep, you're ready to deal with whatever's coming at you. Okay, so you're ready to punch that imaginary fiend in the dark alley. Okay. Something else happens. Your eyes, your pupils widen. Why do you think that happens? Same reason. You're looking now for the threat. I'm on the lookout now. Something's going to hit me. Your hearing becomes more sensitive. So now you're walking down the dark alley. You're tense. Okay. You're sweating. You can hear yourself breathing. And you can hear a twig break. Something that you wouldn't normally hear. You suddenly hear them. Now, that's all right, going down a dark alley, because that's only so long, and in a few moments you're back to normal. But if you're in a job that's very stressful, you might find that, you know, people chatting and work is really getting on your nerves. Why are they talking so loudly? Can't they be quiet? I'm trying to work here. They're just talking. But your ears are picking it up in a hypersensitive way. And so you're very aware of your surroundings in that way. The fact is that blood is being pumped to your ear muscles. And so all of that takes place as your stress response. Now, all of us have experienced stress in this way. But normally the stress dissipates, like the dark alley. You get to the end, you're back out into the lamplight. Nobody kills you, nobody attacks you, and you realize what an idiot you've been and how you've scared yourself half to death. So you start to relax again, and the stress dissipates. And so it is with other things in life. You know, if you're here tomorrow, God forbid, but if you hear that somebody belonging to you died suddenly, you have a stress response. But it will dissipate, you know. If tomorrow, you know, you discover that your ID has been stolen and your bank accounts have been empty, you'll have a stress response. But it'll dissipate once you resolve the problem. Okay? So that's the normal course of life. Problems occur and stress is not going to do us any harm under normal circumstances, unless it is not dispelled and it persists for a prolonged period. If you can imagine, let me bring you back to the dark alley. Let's suppose that alley's not just 100 meters long. Let's suppose it's 100 miles long. It's a long time to be in the alley, isn't it? It's a long time to live with all that stress going on, fearful and having all those arousals taking place within your body and mind and emotions. So now what happens? A person who's constantly under stress at work or in their home life or wherever it is, this person is in overdrive all the time. Their mind is rushing. There's all kinds of thoughts going through their heads constantly. They cannot rest. They go to bed at night. They can't sleep. They're tossing. They're turning. They're thinking. They're mulling stuff over. They're trying to come up with solutions and so on and so forth. They're subject to fear. They're subject to anxiety. They're dreading what tomorrow is going to bring. They get up the next morning. How do they feel? Wrecked. Feel like I never even went to bed last night. Do you ever get up like that? Huh? You feel like you should have just, you know, sat up all night watching your favorite movies or something because, you know, it was a waste of time. You hadn't, you know, you closed your eyes, but you got up more tired than once you went to bed. This is a person who's on the edge. Now, for this person to come along and say, hey, now listen, the peace of God that passes all understanding shall keep your heart and mind in Christ Jesus. That, they're not going to get that. They're not going to get it. Not because it isn't the truth. Because they need to know how to apply that truth. Okay? So, that thought couldn't be further from their heart. Stress in this type of situation is not normal, it's not helpful, it's possibly even life-threatening. So, how is prolonged stress evidenced? Well, the level of arousal remains high. For example, you may suffer from insomnia. I'm not going to ask you to put your hand up, but we may have some insomniacs here. People who cannot rest, who cannot relax, who cannot go to bed at night. You know, I have to say I don't have that problem personally, for the most part. Just hit the pillow and I'm gone. But you may not be that way. Maybe one of those tossers and turners, can't get asleep. You know, what's wrong with you? Stress. Is there an example in the Bible of someone like that who couldn't sleep? You think of anybody? David? I don't remember reading about him tossing on his bed. You may be right. Jacob wrestled with the angel. But was that because he couldn't sleep? Here's one for you. King Artaxerxes in Esther. He couldn't sleep. He got up and he called for the chronicles of the kingdom to be brought to him. So, now, you think about what he asked to be brought to him, to be read to him. What do you think was on his mind? Well, maybe semi-sleep. But more than likely, he was thinking about troubles in the kingdom. You know, how's my kingdom going? Get me the chronicles of the kingdom. You know, how am I doing here as a king? Can't sleep. Also, poor concentration is a sign that you can't concentrate for very long on anything. You know, tiredness, again, comes from insomnia. If you're not sleeping, you're tired all the time. You're more likely to be stressed all the time. Then secondly, not only do your level of arousal remain high, but you have persisting and disturbed emotions. A persisting sense of anxiety, a sense of foreboding. Can you think of someone in the Bible who had a sense of foreboding, someone who was anxious? A prophet. Elijah, when he was threatened by Jezebel. And he went out and he said, Lord, it's enough. What happened? You know, you think about all he'd been through. You see, if I could go back to my arousal chart back here. I'm going to go back here and do it the quick way just to show Hazel how this works. Okay, here's poor old Elijah. When you think about it, you know, he's had all these tasks to do. He's had to go and see the king and tell him there's going to be a drought. He had to arrange the gathering on Carmel. He had to go through the whole procedure there of slaughtering the prophets of Baal. And then his fourth task, the fourth thing he's faced with, Jezebel says, I'm going to kill you. Now, compared to the other things that he's had to do, that was a minor thing. But what did it do? It just sent him out into the desert. Sent him out into the wilderness with a sense of foreboding. Lord, kill me. Do me to death, Lord. I can't take it anymore. So, there may be general fear. There may be irrational fear. Phobias. Phobias are part and parcel of stress. It's amazing the things that people are afraid of. You know, I seen a lady on TV one night was afraid of oranges. Why would you be afraid of oranges? I don't know. Obviously something happened in her past with oranges. Somebody threw them at her or something. I don't know what, but that was her thing. Panic attacks. That's part of partial stress. A lot of people have panic attacks, don't they? Get into a shopping mall or somewhere and they're overcome with this terrible feeling, feeling like something bad's going to happen to them. You know, have to sit down, can't go out, and, you know, they've got to be attended to. And then also irrational feelings of guilt. You know, there's people who feel guilty all the time. They're always saying sorry for this, sorry for that, sorry for that. Always feeling guilty. Now there's a time to feel guilty. But listen, nobody's guilty all the time. You know, you don't have to say sorry for everything in your life. There's got to be something that's right, something that's acceptable. But there are people, bless them, and they live this way, and they're under stress, and their whole life is governed by these feelings. And then there are persistent physical changes and problems. So if you're always under stress, let's think about your muscles again. How are your muscles? If you're stressed going down that dark alley, they're tense. If you're stressed all the time, how do you feel? Tense. Backache. Headache. These are physical problems that are related to your stress condition. Chest pain. Then you have reduced resistance to infection. Obviously, you're weakening your body, you're tiring, you're not sleeping, and so on. Your infection levels are increasing, the likelihood of infection increasing. High blood pressure. Again, we make the point the blood has been rushing to the ears and increasing your awareness of sound. But that's just one little indication of what's going on. Your blood pressure all over is rising. You're putting pressure on your heart, which is why, you know, those businessmen are dying, a third of them, before they reach the age of 60, because they're living constantly under this kind of pressure. Then, of course, there's the stomach ailments, indigestion, ulcers, bowel complaints, irritable bowel syndrome. Those things are stress-related. And, you know, the thing is, people are going to doctors with this stuff. You know, the doctor can treat it, the symptoms, perhaps. But is he really treating the cause? Is he really dealing with the cause? Not really. And again, certain cancers may be stress-related, bowel cancer, stomach cancer, and so on. So it could be that you or somebody you know has been attending a doctor with these complaints, or indeed are subject to yet even more stress as you worry about these ill effects. Because, you know, if you've got constant stomach complaints, or you're always getting headaches, what are you worrying about? I always get headaches. I must have a brain tumor. You know, I got my stomach sore all the time. I must have some terrible stomach ailment. You're worrying about these things. You're only adding more stress to yourself. Okay? And so you're perpetuating the problem, and you're exacerbating it. But there is a peace that passes all understanding. And that's what Paul tells us in Philippians 4. And he says that that peace of God will keep your hearts and minds. He says that it will actually be set upon your heart and your mind like a sentinel, like a guardsman, placed on your heart to protect you from anxiety and protect you from worry and to protect you from stress. And we can have those things, and they're all part of God's work for us. But we need to understand how they're obtained and how we deal with stresses when they come into our lives. Now, it is holiday season, so you're supposed to have 4 weeks off now, relaxing. That'll help. And we will come back in September if you haven't had a heart attack by then, and we'll pick up and look at the cure of stress. Okay?